music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're thrilled to welcome a very talented singer-songwriter and music producer from Los Angeles who's worked with A-list artists like Britney Spears, Kelly Rowland, Justin Bieber, and the legendary Miss Janet Jackson. Tommy Parker is here to talk about his career, explain why he has three different names, and what it was like to work with Janet on her latest number one hit album, Unbreakable. We also chat with our fashion consultant, Parmal Gahunia, giving us the latest on fall fashion trends, and then we wrap things up with an awesome remix of Janet's number one single, No Sleep. We are thrilled to welcome singer-songwriter and music producer Tommy Parker to the show, who's worked his magic for artists like Justin Bieber, Britney Spears, Kelly Rowland, and the legendary Janet Jackson, including several tracks on her brand new Unbreakable album. Tommy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kelly.
We're so happy to have you on the show. We can't wait to learn all about you. First of all, I wanted to ask you how your musical journey began.
My journey began, I mean, I always loved music. And my mother was into music. My father played all the wood instruments. So I just grew up around music, and I loved it. So I played the piano when I was like 10, and started making beats when I was like 13, and I just kept going. I love music.
That's awesome. Now, who would you say are your earliest musical influences apart from your parents?
I think, of course, the Jacksons, Michael Jackson, Janet, but then I like a lot of jazz, like George Duke is my all-time favorite, Duke Ellington. I'm real sporadic with my musical taste.
All over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what music, I guess I'll ask you, moves you the most, and how would you describe your sound as like a music producer?
You know, it's more so jazz for me. Jazz can take me there because it's the chords that I love, the transitions, and just sometimes chords will hit your heart, and those are the chords that I love. Okay. Makes it all warm.
And how would you describe, you know, your sound as a music producer, or do you find that it's sort of ever evolving?
Always evolving. I don't know what to say about my beats. I mean, I don't know what to say about it. Like, am I modest about it? I love music, but I'm always like sort of insecure in my music.
Okay.
But I don't exactly know what to say.
That's okay. I'm sure someone soon will categorize your music, and then you'll have to go with that.
Yes, thank you.
What would you consider your first big break that sort of knocked open some doors for you?
To be honest with you, it was Janet. I wrote Make Me with Rodney Jerkins and Michaela Renee Shiloh, and with Janet as well, but that's what really started me. It was in 2009 it came out, and I got signed to Rodney Jerkins around that time, and that was like my first major placement. So it was Janet, full circle.
Wow, that's so great. And how did you, like, at the time when you wrote Make Me, did you know that it was going for Janet, or were you guys just working on a track?
Well, at first we didn't know, and then we did know, because it was like, Janet has a very specific sound, and it started one way, and then it was going another way, and it was like, especially when it went to, I don't stop it, baby, I don't stop till you get it up. Now, okay, that's Michael. Mm-hmm. That's like a tribute to Michael, and rest in peace, that was around the time where he passed away, so it was an honor to be a part of that record, and I think it was really good for her to, you know, pay tribute to him.
That was fantastic. Yeah, I think a lot of us loved it, especially because we hadn't heard sort of like, not that we hadn't heard music from her in a while, but obviously it was after her brother passed. So I think a lot of us were happy to hear her sing and see her smile in a music video.
Exactly.
Can you actually talk to us? Because we're going to get back to Janet in a sec, but I wanted to ask you how you and Rodney Jerkins hooked up, because obviously he's done so much great work for so many people, including, people like Destiny's Child.
He's an awesome producer. I mean, I started working with them through the grapevine because me and my production partner, Tommy Brown, we were doing a lot of music in Atlanta when we got some people that wanted to work with us. And then through those people, we got to Rodney. And then we went back to California and started working with Rodney. And it was pretty organic. It was really through someone else that heard our music music and rock music. I want to sign these guys. And we got signed and we started working with them for a couple of years.
That's awesome. And how did you and Austin Brown become buddies?
The funny thing is we, I met Austin when I first got signed to Rodney, and I didn't even know it was Austin. I thought it was Chris Tucker's younger brother. For some reason, because Chris Austin and Chris Tucker are very good friends through Michael.
Okay.
And they're talking about Chris Tucker a lot. I was like, is this Chris Tucker's brother? And then I talked to Rodney again. He was like, I really want you to work with Michael Jackson's nephew. I was like, well, who is that? He's like, it was Austin. You just met him. I was like, that's Austin? He's like, yeah. I was like, I thought that was Chris Tucker's brother. But me and Austin, when we first met each other, we had like this crazy connection. And when we started working, doing music together, it got even stronger. And, you know, we've just been best friends since then. This is like after Make Me was done, Austin went into the studio with Rodney after Janet was working on her records, and we continued on working since. We've been working for like 5 years.
What's going on with him and you now? Like, because are you in his band still?
Yeah, just not as much.
You're a busy guy.
You know, I'm producing. Yeah, I'm not as much, but no, he's getting ready for, he's having some spot dates coming up, but I'm not sure of the dates, but he's still working, going hard, and can't wait to start performing himself.
That's fantastic. Now, before I get into your role with Janet, especially on the new album, I wanted to ask you this, because thankfully I was able to track you down in not too hard of fashion, but you've got like several, it seems like, professional names going on. You got Tommy Parker, Mr. McClendon, and T. Lumpkins. You got to tell us the reason behind all these three different monikers, because you're hard to find out that you're one person.
I know, right? Well, I am a Gemini. That's one.
Okay.
But... I started my name as Tommy Parker, and then for my writing credits when I did music, rightfully, it's my government name, which is T. Lumpkins. And then when I worked with Janet, my mother passed away from breast cancer. So Janet told me, she said, you need to represent your mother, and you should go by her maiden last name. So that's where I got Mr. McClendon from, because my mom's maiden name was McClendon. So I was like, I'll just go by T. Lumpkins and McClendon.
Nice.
And hopefully that goes right. And then Terry Lewis called me up. He said, now this is kind of crazy. He said, how do you got all these names? Like, how people know who you are? Like, I don't know. I mean, I wanted to represent those names.
Well, you've done a good job. And I'm so glad we figured out that you're one person. Because...
Thank you.
So just to make
people like this guy is crazy.
So now, like, if we see though a writing credit for you, it's T. Lumpkins. That's your official name, because that you need to be accredited properly for that.
Right.
Okay. Awesome. And yeah. and just so my listeners are clear, because we have a lot of Janet listeners that listen to the show. So Tommy Parker, Mr. McClendon, and T. Lumpkins, all the same person, and we have them right here with us. And
yes.
make sure you follow Tommy, by the way, on his social media. You can follow him on Twitter and on Instagram at Tommy Parker 80s, and that's 80s. So Tommy, yes. I want to bring you back to Janet. When did you first meet her?
I met her at Rotten Studio. In 2009, and I was super nervous. And, you know, Janet, she has her way of, I can say, turning on and being like that super duper Janet. And she walked in, and I was so nervous, and she bumped into me. She's like, oh, excuse me. I was like, oh my gosh, like, is this really happening? And I didn't really get to talk to her that much, but she told me that she felt like I had like some, I reminded her of a Jackson, and I get that a lot. So we started working more after that, because it was a very, I reminded her of somebody.
So that was like 2009. Yeah. And then with regards, yeah. And then obviously, you know, for a lot of us, you know, she went away for a bit, you know, like she took a hiatus, if we can call it that.
Yeah.
When did you get the call or the notification from her or her people that they wanted you to work on the new album?
It was like 2014, something like that. They asked, and they said that, would you like to write with Janet? And I'm like, heck yeah. I love to do that, but at the time I was doing more writing. I wasn't producing so much. But then I had some tracks that I did, and I was so nervous to show her because I was like, "Well, you're a legend, and I don't know if you want my production because you're so much of a legend." And she said, "No, Tom, let me hear it." And I started sweating real bad. I let her hear it. She's like, "This is really fresh. This is really cool. I would do something like this." I said, "No way." She's like, "Yeah, seriously, Tommy, I'll do something like this." And then sure enough, a couple months later, she's recording it. And
wow.
Jimmy Jam and Terry stepped in to help out the production to make it more her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, man, I was just totally floored. To be honest, I'm still floored. I still don't believe this is all happening, but it is.
That's so great. And all of us, you know, who love Janet so much have obviously embraced you and think you did such a great job. How many actual tracks did you do with on the album? Because I know, you know, you did Unbreakable, you did Night, which, by the way, is my jam. I love that song. It's my jam in the car. And we also know you did Gonna Be All Right. So how many tracks on the album did you actually have a hand in?
I also co-produced Dreammaker Euphoria.
Okay.
And those... And for everyone to know, those samples are me singing.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Unbreakable and Dreammaker Euphoria. Those are me.
That's so great. You're on a Janet album.
Thank you. The last one I did was Love You for Life on the Target Deluxe version.
Okay. And which song did you, like, start with her? Like, was it Bare Bones? Did you, like, start on Unbreakable, like, you and her? Or was that all four of you involved in that?
It was like, I had an idea and I sent it to them. And they embellished it.
Okay.
So it started with Dreammaker Euphoria and Unbreakable. Yeah, we started with that, and they, you know, Jimmy Jam and Terry, they do the magic, and however it sounded, they just made it sound so much better.
Yeah, those guys have been around for a while. I guess they know what they're doing, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they do.
Do you have a favorite song on the album? I know it's hard because they're all your babies, but, like, does one sort of really stick out from you or for you?
I really like After You Fall is one of my favorite songs because... I think it's so true. I mean, she hits a lot of points to me because, you know, everyone deals with a whole lot of stuff and they deal with a lot of different people. And, you know, when things happen good for you, you start to see that you lose the friends that you thought you have. And listening to that song, it brought me back to a lot of situations like that. So that, and of course, Broken Hearts Heal is one of my favorite songs.
Which is amazing. I think a lot of people were brought to tears by both of those songs. Can you talk to us, Tommy, about what it's like to be in a room writing music with Janet? Because I'm assuming, you know, because you got songwriting credit, so I'm assuming you guys actually sat in a room and did this. What was that like?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was just like writing with anyone else, but she has such a cow-like manner to her. She's like... We're able to be children when we're doing the studio, when we're at the studio, because it's like there's no ego, there's no boundaries. It's just having a good time, writing music that feels good to you, rather than writing music that you think will feel good for the masses of people.
Mm-hmm.
It was more personal for her, and then getting to know her and getting to know the silly side of her. It was great. And Jimmy Jam and Terry are the same. They're just everyone does not age in that camp. So it's like being around your peers, but they're super legends. So once you get over the shock of who they are and you just, you know, tame yourself down, it was a blast. I had so much fun.
And did you do most of the writing like in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Now, I actually wanted to get your you know, impression or opinion on this, because obviously the album seems very much like it's like a thank you gift to her fans. Like it just feels that. And, you know, if you're a longtime Janet fan, you know that she loves her fans. She's always been extremely gracious to her fan base and you know, treats everybody amazingly well. And you can tell she really appreciates her fans. But for some reason, when I listen to this new album, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way, I feel like she has come to, like, even a higher revelation about her fans and what they mean to her. So did that sort of translate into the Unbreakable song and just the album itself? Because it just really feels like, I don't know if it's because she was living overseas and really away from some of her family. Like, I don't know, but it just feels like it's a higher level of appreciation for her Janet family.
I think it has to do with her being away for a little bit. But it's just something to have people love you for so long. And then when you decide to take a break, and then when you dip your head back in, they still love you that strong. And I think she realized that over the years, and she's like, she owes everything to her fans and the people that have been there for her all this time through all these struggles. And I think I think it might have to do with wisdom, being wiser, or I really don't know, because she shows me so much love too. And I started out as I'm still a super fan. And she showed me so much love by allowing me to be so much a part of the project like this. And I think that was giving back as well, you know, because she was just so nice. And I'm like, I'm not your Rodney Jerkins. I'm not Jimmy German Carey. I'm just the three people I mentioned on the name, Tommy Parker, T. Lumpkin, Clinton, that's who I am. But I'm not nobody that's, you know, super famous or has a big background. And she didn't care about that. It's all about the music and the love. And I came from my heart because I truly love Janet. And I came from my heart with the music. And she added her heart back onto my music. And I think that was lovely.
What do you think you learned the most from working with Janet Jackson so closely?
I think I learned how to write a really dope song. I think I learned that. Like, smooth and have a touch of sexiness, but not all overdoing the sexiness. Just vibe. Just cool vibe. I can say that I learned that.
Is she, like, hard on herself when she's in a writing session? Because I know, like, different artists are, like, attack things different ways. Like, I remember reading an article from Elton John, like, several years back where he said if he can't sort of bang out a song in 10 minutes, like, it's not worth it. Like, he knows he's on the wrong path, like, and that's how he works. Like, how long did you guys work on lyrics? Like, was it hashing it out over several days, or could you actually knock things out, like, in a day?
Well, Jaden likes to take her time. She doesn't like to overthink too much stuff. Like to take time with it. So sometimes we will write a song, and if we're not feeling it, are you feeling it, Tommy? But if not really, it's okay, well, let's take a break. We'll come back to it. And if we remember the melody in our heads, then we'll finish it. But if we don't remember it, we'll just leave it alone. Because all, you know, big songs, you remember the hook, or you remember some part of the song that you just keeps ringing in your head. And that's how she is. She would just shut it down. We'll take a break. We'll go back to it. You feeling it? Nope. Let it go.
When it comes to production for her, like, how did that work for you? Because obviously you did the songwriting, but, like, were you tough on yourself with like, you know, producing the tracks and sort of getting them ready for Jimmy and Terry? Because I'm like you said earlier, it's hard with these legends in the room.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when she called me and she said, I played your records for Jimmy. And I just almost dropped the phone because I modeled myself off of Janet fan. So within the Janet fan, I'm a super Jimmy Jam and Terry fan as a musician, and I modeled my sound off of them. I study their chords. I try to study everything about them. So when she told me that she played them my music, and then they loved it. I'm like, no way, because I was nervous about it. Because I'm like, I don't know if you're going to like this music, but I sent it. And they loved it too. And I was just like, well, that just works well. And the funny thing is about me and Jimmy, me and him, we have the same birthday. We're both born on June 6th. So I thought that was funny that she got two Geminis and we're both on the 6th.
That's awesome. And when you were in the studio with all of them, what do you think, you know, like her fans and their fans would be the most surprised to know about how things go down with regards to recording? Like, is there something that I feel like they're just like, I feel like they are like a superhero, all three of them wrapped into one.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. They get each other more than anything. They get each other. Like musically and everything, like, I don't know. I can't really explain it. They just get each other. Like when I was there, like I was, because the Jimmy and Terry studio, there's a downstairs and upstairs, and there's each side. And I was downstairs working, and Janet was in one side, and Jimmy was in the other side. And they just, they just have this thing down packed and they just go. And I'm just doing my own little thing at the bottom. And then I look up and Janet's just singing her heart out. And Jimmy's in the other room, either producing or telling her what to sing next in the other room. And I'm just like, you guys got this down. Like, you've been doing it for so long, but they're just, it's so natural.
When did the album actually get completed? Like, was it earlier in the spring? Because it just seems, like I said, she was so great about how she announced the album. And then it was like, boom, you know, the tour is coming and the singles dropped and all that sort of stuff. So were you guys done earlier in the year?
Actually, no. We were done more so close to the summer. We were done. I mean, she did a lot of records. So then it came time to pick the songs that are cohesive for a body of work and what she was trying to say. And I think that's what took the time. But we were done like in May, at the end of May, around my birthday, we were done.
And speaking of the cohesive work, I wanted your opinion on this because, you know, obviously there's been a lot of discussion about the new album. Obviously, it went to number one. I have not read one negative review about the album. Like, there's been like some people that have, you know, maybe criticized a little bit here or there, but like everybody has said what a great album it is. And if you listen to it, obviously, you know, there's so many different textures and influences it feels like and all that sort of stuff. And I kind of liken it to almost like her Velvet Rope 2.0, for lack of a better word. Is that how you guys feel? Because it just seems like, obviously, she blows out any album that she does, but this one just seems like it's a continuation to the Velvet Rope.
I think it is. I think it's like that. I mean, I had a, I don't know if Janet wanted me to tell you this, but I had a personal conversation with her, and it was real late, and she said, Tommy, I'm sick of young women not having a proper, another woman to look up to. I'm sick of them just looking up to these booty-shaking girls, these girls that have no respect for themselves. She said, someone needs to say something. I'm going to say something. I don't want our future to grow up like this. And it needs to be a change. And I was like, well, you're the only one that can do it. And she, sure enough, she did it. And she applied everything that she was talking about into the songs because it's really dear to her heart because she's a people lover. She loves people. And she wants to better people, I feel. And I think this album is that. So you can't hate on somebody that just loves you for no reason. Mm-hmm. You cannot hate on that.
She's amazing. That's awesome.
She's so amazing. And I think that's why it's doing so well and people love it because it's real love. It's not synthetic. It's real.
It's so great that she feels like, for lack of a better word, a responsibility almost to sort of come back on the scene and show the youngins, if I can call them that, to sort of get their head on straight.
Yeah.
It's fantastic because especially coming from someone who's in the pop world, because I think a lot of times pop artists don't get taken seriously. And she obviously got taken seriously very young as a 23-year-old with Rhythm Nation. And it's so great that she had that at 23 and that she's still thinking, you know, of that all these years later.
Yeah, because I mean, it kind of got worse for our culture with social media and then being able to take pictures and put it publicly anywhere you want, and you get people in Greenland, Ireland looking at your pictures, and you're just in a small town in America or in Canada, and people are seeing in Africa. It's just like you're exposed to so much at any age, you know, and it's like, when is someone going to step up and say, like, we need to kind of change the way our children are viewing this stuff? We need to change ourselves a little bit, you know, not to say that I'm better than anybody, because we all need change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what she's trying to relay in her message in the album.
Tommy, as someone who, you know, has worked closely with her over the last like several months, do you think, especially, you know, you being a fan on top of, you know, being a colleague of hers, I feel like you have a really good perspective on this. Does she really know, like, obviously she knows her fans love her, like, that's, you know, not a question, but does, like, she know just how special she is? Because, you know, I've been fortunate to interview a lot of her colleagues, whether they've been former dancers or choreographers and people around her in the past, and she just, you know, she just seems to make everybody see love and light, and everybody, I've not had one person say anything bad about her in any regard. Does she know, you know, what a, like, it's like, again, it's almost like she's her own, like, own superstar in the sky and people just gravitate around her. Does she know that? Does she feel that responsibility?
No, she's just super modest about it. She doesn't know. She just feels like she's doing the best she can, and she'll always do the best she can. And that's how she goes about it. She doesn't pay attention to it. Me personally, that's why I'm like, I'm going to take care of Janet then. Since you don't feel you like this, I'm going to take care of you.
That's so great. And do you ever see her like doing social media? Because like she's so good about hardly ever being on it. I think all of us should take a page from her.
I never see her on social media.
Okay.
Never. Not even one time.
That's awesome. That's so good because I've never seen someone have such self-restraint because everybody's constantly on their phones and posting this, that, and something else. And I feel like she really does pick her spots, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. I think she's taken, you know, back from when she was growing up, being mystical and being a little mysterious. Like, there's no room to be mysterious nowadays as an artist. And that's a little bit she has left to be mysterious. So I think she's taken that approach.
And I wanted to ask you as well, we talked about it a few moments ago, but I did want to get, you know, your thoughts. What did it feel like for Tommy Parker to know that he was a part of a group that had the number one album, over 106,000 copies sold, and you're, you know, in credits alongside Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, and Janet Jackson, also, you know, Dem Joints as well?
I tell you, I still can't believe it. I can't. I started, when I found out about it, I'm blessed to say that I got hit up from Jimmy and Janet and told me, like, we did it. We were number one. I was like, oh, my gosh. And I'm like, it was an historical moment for me, but I don't know. I can't even express to you how happy I was and just, I don't know. I was all in my feelings right there.
You know you're going to get a lot of calls now, right? You're going to get a lot of calls from people?
I hope so.
You're going to get a lot of work.
I hope so. Yeah, yeah. I hope so. I hope people, you know, they love what I contribute. They're not just, you know, she's a legend and she has her sound. And I hope they will want, you know, to work with me for the sound that I can give and not just the legend sound of Janet.
Now, before I let you go, what is up next for Tommy Parker? Because I'm sure you've got a lot of irons in the fire and people want to follow your career.
I'm still writing and stuff. And, you know, eventually I want to be an artist myself. But I don't know. Hopefully I don't get too old. But I mean, I'm 30, but you never know. I'm just writing. I got some work that's going to come out with Big Sean. And that's about it. I just been trying to keep myself busy and not paying attention to the album that's already out too much.
Is there an artist?
I gotta keep working.
Is there an artist out there now that you would love to work with? Like, obviously, you did the Janet thing, which I think a lot of people would love to trade places with you. But is there someone else out there now that's like a huge artist that people would know and that you would love to have a hand in crafting their next single?
Oh yeah, Mariah Carey.
I knew you were gonna say that. You know that? I knew you were gonna say that.
You did? How? How'd you know, Kelly?
I don't know. I just had this feeling. I'm like, he's going to say Mariah Carey. I love it. That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like you'd get along very well with her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love me some Mariah Carey. I love Mariah Carey.
That's awesome. Well, we'll put it out in the universe for you.
Thank you. Yeah, let her know.
So, Tommy, I want to thank you so much for this. You're a rock star, and you're so sweet and kind. So thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you for having me, Kelly. This is my first interview.
Well, you did
about
a great
the album,
job.
Too.
Oh, you did a great job. We cannot wait. I cannot wait for the fans to hear it. And I'm going to tell them again, make sure to follow Tommy on all of his social media, at TommyParker80s.
Find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Click on KellyAlexanderShow.com. I woke up in heaven in the morning. Oh, with a breakthrough, love is taking over.
been a hot minute since we've heard from this lady, but we are very happy to have her back on the show, our fashion consultant, Parmal Gahunia. We are going to be talking a lot about fall fashion. Parmal, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So, very excited to have you back. And I know that I think this has been a particular year where a lot of people seem really pumped about fall fashion.
People are super pumped about fall fashion. I think it's because all of the runway shows were, a lot of them were very commercial. So people really feel like they can translate high fashion into mainstream. So I think that's why everyone's so excited about it, because the colors were great, the prints were great, there's something for everyone.
So where do you want to start? Because I know there's so many, you know, Fashion Week just finished not that long ago, and there were so many great designers that were doing their thing for fall 2015.
Well, I think all of the shows are great. So if people get a chance, they should definitely check it out. You can pretty much YouTube any of the shows and watch it, which is nice, because no one really has that much money to go spend on Fashion Week and have a ticket to go to Paris, but kind of makes you feel like you were there. Some of the key shows I feel that really were amazing this year were Louis Vuitton, Alexander McQueen, Valentino, and Chloe, of course, because everyone is nuts about Chloe in that 70s trend. So I think Louis Vuitton this year with Nicolas Jean-Pierre, the show is super futuristic, really cool. Like I said, check it out on YouTube. It began inside three space-age domes at the Fondation Louis Vuitton, and the collection featured lots of coats and with great detailing, such as patent leather and fur, really, really commercial. We're going to be talking about coats and jackets a lot, because everyone really had staple pieces in all the collections. Some of the key elements definitely in the Louis Vuitton show were satin suits, printed minis, lacy metallic slip dresses. The look was tailored, but it was mixed with flowy. Again, that was a huge trend this year as well. Black and white minimalist mixed with winter whites and leopard prints. Lots of shine and metallic, so that's kind of where the futuristic look came in. The knockout was definitely the handbags. We all know the Louis Vuitton iconic handbags that everyone's used to, but really, this time the house took it to a completely different level. There were like these trunk bags that were like in metallic, like rose gold or silver, and they literally look like makeup cases. You know, those makeup cases mm-hmm. that makeup artists take around with them. Really, really cute, and they had them in all different sizes. And the smaller ones had different prints on them. So just kind of different, but it kind of brought it back to the Louis Vuitton trunk from back in the day, like that iconic piece. And then, of course, we talked about the jackets. So for me, the jackets really, really, really brought the show to a new level. There was full on, like we talked about, fur, different prints, different textures. And so, like, I think in every single show, the Louis Vuitton show was very futuristic. That was kind of the trend they were going for. But then we got to Alexander McQueen, who's always a favorite for everyone. And it was a completely different theme. And I think the cool part here, Kelly, and I don't know if you heard this, was that a lot of the designers really took it to a theme. And then the feeling of the overall show, like even the location, really took the theme to like another level. And made the audience feel like they were in that time almost.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, the McQueen show, they're calling it Sarah Burton's most memorable collection. There was obviously lots of dramatic pieces because Alexander McQueen, the house, is known for that. Mm-hmm. And the pieces themselves were super dramatic. But also where it was set was really dramatic. It was in a basement of a cathedral, very low lighting, very darkly romantic, and even the models, they were like pale as can be. They almost look like a little zombie-esque, I would say, but their hair was all crazy. Like, think about like a Victorian aged, you know, beauty, or because they're mm-hmm. all beautiful, but really dramatic hair, super, super pale, and then the outfit just speaks for itself, very minimal makeup. But really, really cool. And then the theatrics of that paired with the clothing that was really tailored, lots of tailored separates that were in and of themselves showstoppers, but they were really beautiful colors mixed in, like black, red, and blush, like very dramatic. So think about the blush mixed in with like solid black or red, very stark differences there. And the silhouettes were nicked in waistlines, moderately flared skirts. One of my favorites was an accordion skirt that they had. I really hope we're going to see this mainstream. And it looked like it was dip dyed. So it was like black at the top and then just the bottom was like blush.
Oh, wow.
So super, super. Yeah, really nice. I think, again, the silhouette is something that could have looked nice on pretty much anyone. So that was a nice change as well. And then, of course, the Victorian style, there's lots of brocade jackets embellished with lace and fur. So we talked about lace and fur. We're going to be talking about that a lot this season. It never seems to die. We talk about it every single season for fall around the bodices. And then, of course, ruffles. Lots of ruffles for this collection. Again, tying in with the Victorian theme. And yeah, so for that was a huge trend this year, the Victorian look. And then the minimalist and the bohemian style was another thing we saw in the Valentino show and also in the Chloe collection, which everyone is really obsessed with Chloe right now, the Chloe girl, and also kind of like for the feminists in us, we really like Chloe. But we'll start with Valentino. So the Valentino show for a long time has kind of been the same thing, all those great evening gowns, kind of the same look year after year, but it's always a stunner, it's always a crowd pleaser, but never really anything different.
Okay.
And so did you hear anything about the Valentino show? It was all over social media.
Not
a lot.
It was
like a nice little surprise at the end.
You got to tell us then.
So it was really cool because I've never heard of this happening before, but Maria Garcia Chichuri and Pier Paolo Piscicoli, I hope I said that right, for Valentino clearly showed that they could be really different this year. Like I said, it was minimalist, but the most memorable moment came at the end of the show when they actually got Derek Zoolander and Hansel walk the runway because Zoolander 2 is coming out really soon. So yeah, they came out at the end of the show to Don't You Want Me, Baby. And it was just like the crowd went crazy. Everyone was laughing. It was a very dramatic show in and of itself because obviously runway shows and catwalks always are. But I don't think anybody was expecting that at the end. And everyone just loved it. I mean, that was all anyone could talk about, really, in addition to obviously the great fashion. But it was a really, really, really great moment for Paris Fashion Week. So that's obviously on a side note from the fashion, but in addition, the fashion was really, really great as well. Focusing on two main things, it was kind of like it was two collections into one, which makes sense and means two different people, but it was a lot of, again, black and white dresses, long evening gowns, color blocks, and then there was beautiful colored bohemian prints, and the prints were just probably out of all the shows, the best prints were at the Valentino show. Something for everyone, kind of inspired by lots of different ethnicities, I would say, and from different parts of the world. And then the vibe was just beautiful. Mini dresses, long gowns. We always see long gowns for Valentino. Silk slips and jackets all mixed into one show, which is really, really nice. The look was almost effortless. Like it actually meshed together very well. And I think one of my favorite pieces, like I said, were all the evening gowns, because I think sometimes evening gowns, with especially Valentino, can be over the top. And that's what a lot of times you see Valentino worn on the red carpet, even during award shows with celebrities. And I hope it's nothing different this time either. And I think celebrities will still be wearing this, but there was really something for everyone with various prints, in addition to, like I said, a solid white gown that just flowed beautifully, or a black and white color block gown. And just again, it was all about the cut and that silhouette that we're so used to seeing from Valentino. And then of course we leave the best to last, that 70s look. On Fashion Fridays we've been doing a lot of 70s looks, you guys have probably noticed, and the inspiration comes from Chloe. I mean, Chloe's the biggest, the House of Chloe is the biggest inspiration for this look right now. I think every major retailer has taken something from the Chloe collection. So it was my favorite show. Claire Waite Keller, whose show landed ironically on International Women's Day, and everyone knows she's a kind of a feminist, stayed true to her Chloe girl. She started the show by sending her audience an anonymous poem. And it was, it was pretty cool, actually. It was pretty inspiring. And it was work for a cause, not for applause. Live life to express, not to impress. Don't strive to make your presence noticed. Just make your absence felt, which is like, wow, so powerful, right, to start a show with.
It's amazing.
I think everyone wants a little bit of a cause to talk about.
Yeah, of course, right?
But no matter what the trend, the Chloe girl really did stick to her 70s style. So the collection featured menswear-inspired outerwear, frilly blouses and dresses, and a feeling of uninhibited romance. Like, really, it was super beautiful. I think it was most beautiful and for myself as a viewer and even for the viewers at home. If you really do watch the collection, you feel that you could almost wear any of the anything that was on that runway. So obviously it translates really, really well. And the show was filled with flowy peasant dresses and skinny scarves. So remember the skinny scarves from the 70s, which probably none of us have worn already because we're all too young for that. But it's really great. It was super mod. And the vests over the dresses or the blouses, the lace details inspired by sexy lingerie on the skirts and the camisoles, along with corduroy. Gosh, it's been a long time since we talked about corduroy. Suede and shearling details on jackets and jumpsuits. Really, really, really great collection. But the standout pieces for me were, again, the bohemian maxi dresses. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that we're going to take maxi dresses into fall is really exciting to me because it's not something we always see during the fall collection.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And the prints were just so beautiful. So I think that's going to be something that we're going to see a lot more of. The peacoat. So the peacoat's always really big for fall. But this year, the House of Chloe took it to a different level. The peacoat was like looser fitting, a lot more kind of Austin. I want to say Austin Powers, but Austin Powers in like a cool way, right?
Okay.
So like kind of looser fitting. Some of them had like cape sleeves. So it was really cool. It was like they took traditional and mixed it in with new and old, but made it, you know, very commercial again. And the floor length trenches, which were really cool. So trench coats that were really simplified in tweed or full shearing. So it looked like almost, you know, like head to toe shearling, or suede. And they were really, really minimalist, but super cool in their structure and total floor length. So we haven't seen that in a really long time as well. And ponchos. Everyone who's like out there in the fashion world is talking about ponchos endlessly now because they've made such a huge comeback. And I think there's some we'd care to forget about, but they've really made ponchos a huge, huge focus for fall. And the House of Chloe was no different. There was a full dress, a full length dress in a poncho that was patched with different fabrics on it. Really, really interesting stuff. So I think that's going to be something that we're going to be seeing totally flow over into mainstream as well.
We were talking about jackets. Like, is that like the thing to have like into next spring kind of thing?
I think everybody during fall looks for a new fall jacket just to kind of update their wardrobe a little bit. And I think for sure we're going to be seeing a lot of what we saw on the runway translate into mainstream. We already are. Like, peacoats are huge right now in most retailers. There's something for everyone. But more so than ever, like, the cape coat is really, really popular as well. So that's something I think that if anybody really wanted to kind of jazz up their wardrobe a little bit, if they got a cool staple jacket. And there's really something for everyone. So if you're a little bit more conscious about your body, you could always do the looser fitting cape coat, which some people would say, well, wouldn't that make me look bigger? Not really. It's camouflage. I wouldn't do like a full fur jacket, which faux fur is huge right now. Like, we talked about the shearing as well. Again, if you're a bigger body type or if you're a little more self-conscious, it does add volume to to your body.
Okay.
So it isn't meant for everyone. I wouldn't say, especially in that Louis Vuitton show that I was talking about, we saw a lot of that. I mean, those models are stick thin, so obviously it looks great on them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's something really for everyone. And so that the trenches are making such a huge comeback right now in wool and tweed. We haven't really seen tweed make a big comeback in a while. It's been a lot of solid wools. So I think that's going to be something that's really going to be nice for the everyday customer to kind of integrate into their wardrobe. And so the styles are classics that we saw on the runway, but just kind of the hardware on them or a little detail of patent leather somewhere. Like, none of them were really that over the top other than the fur or shearing jackets. I think everything else is super wearable. So we did see at the Sakai show, though, there were some jackets that were really beautifully tailored and had like a lot of over-the-top details to them. Like, they were bursting at the seam, at the shoulder, with like fur coming out of them or knit. So, I mean, again, is this something for everyone? No, but are we definitely going to see this in mainstream brought down for you know, you and I? Definitely. I think that it's going to be something that translates the gray tweed, the winter white colors that we are seeing, and jewel tones, like lots of jewel tones in jackets as well, which is nice because for a while it was just black,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, navy or gray.
Right.
Or white, exactly. So I think we are going to see a lot of jackets. And like I said, there's a lot of variety this year. There's even sportier jackets, which we saw last year as well, like the down-filled, shinier metallic jackets. We're going to be seeing that again this year. Down-filled jackets are always really big, and they kind of take you on a more casual approach as well for the more casual customer.
Okay, cool. You're a rock star. Thank you so much for this.
No problem. Anytime. And I really, really do suggest everyone go check it out on YouTube, because it's super impactful when you actually see it. Versus, of course, this is just giving you a little bit of a view, but it'll set you up for what you will actually see.
Perfect. So make sure to check out Parmal's website, which is parmal-gahunia403.com. And of course, each and every Friday on the Kelly Alexander Show, Parmal is very awesome and posts a Fashion Friday on our Facebook page. We also share it to our Instagram account as well, which is Kelly Alexander Show, both on Facebook and on Instagram. Well, it's at Kelly Alexander Show. But we appreciate this, Parmal, so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're so welcome, Kelly, and happy fall to everybody.
Excellent. So we will be speaking to Parmal in the new year, of course, getting ready for award show season and spring fashion. So that's all coming up. And again, this is Parmal Gahunia on The Kelly Alexander Show.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show. This is The Remix.
First, but after a while, too much sugar, they say it's bad for your smile. So meet up at the place that we always do, the one swimming through my mind that was always you. Had to fit it in my schedule, gotta skate by 6. Damn, how'd it get so late so quick? No sleep.
Don't have time to sleep, but we can't dream so thick outside the box. My baby, show me how much you are missing me.
I'm gonna do this.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We really appreciate you spending some time with us on the show this week, and a big thank you going out to my guests, Tommy Parker and Parmel Gahunia. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Winston Churchill. Continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is the key to unlocking our potential. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media. You can find us on Twitter, at @KAlexanderShow, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at @KellyAlexanderShow, and of course, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have an excellent week. You and I'll chat soon.